It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Michael Blowen is our guest today, founder of Old Friends, a retirement farm for thoroughbreds located in Scott County, Kentucky, north of Lexington. Michael started Old Friends in 2003 with one horse and a rented paddock. And today, Old Friends is a 236-acre facility, has three satellite locations. There's now an Old Friends in Japan, and Old Friends is home to more than 240 retired former racehorses and breeding stallions. And Michael, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you, Keith. What a pleasure it is to come and talk to you.
This is quite a story. It's a wonderful cause, and it's also become quite an attraction as the years have gone by, as you near the 20th anniversary of Old Friends. But give us a little insight into how this all got started, because it wasn't like you grew up around here and were into racing from a very early age, was it?
No, not at all. In fact, I didn't go to my first horse race until I was in my mid-20s. I used to write for the Boston Globe, and I had an editor there who was a magic copy editor and editor, and he would take my copy and he'd take it from a C-minus to a B-plus in like 2 minutes. And one day he called me up and he said, "I'm going to Suffolk Downs. I'm meeting a friend of mine who's the foreign correspondent for Time magazine." And he said, "We're going to Suffolk Downs. Do you want to go?" And I would have gone anywhere with this guy because he was really, really... his name was Robert Taylor, and he was a great arts editor and just a tremendous human being. I would have gone anywhere, and I'd never been to a racetrack before, and I went to Suffolk Downs, and I fell in love with it immediately. Mm-hmm. I really started out not loving the horses, but I started out loving the drinking and the gambling part,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I still do like that part, but eventually, as things evolved— I thought the only thing missing from my handicapping prowess, which wasn't much of a prowess, but in any case, the only thing missing was I didn't know anything about the horses. So eventually I apprenticed myself out to a $3,500 claiming bottom-of-the-barrel trainer named Carlos Figueroa, who is known as the King of the Fairs because he always won races at the Massachusetts Fairs where the purses were like $1,000 and... Anyway, in any case, I worked for Carlos for a year and a half, and during that period of time, you know, when you're really at the bottom and you know you have no aspirations except to get the stall done and walk the horse around, you know, they let you see everything because they're not afraid of you because you're not trying to take their job or do anything. So it was completely non-competitive, and I started to fall in love with the horses, and when I fell in love with the horses, then that was the end of it, and eventually it evolved into what we have today.
And when you talk about getting acquainted with the racing business in the way that you did, when you say get the stall done, you're not talking about the most glamorous part of horse racing, are you?
No, and these weren't the most glamorous horses. Yeah. You know, it was very interesting because nobody could really make a living there. It wasn't, you know, I fell in love with the horses, but it was a tough living environment. You always knew that spring was coming at Suffolk when the ice melted and all those little vodka, tiny little vodka bottles started to pop up from the ice and the snow. So it was a tough crowd and everything. It was tough on the people, it was tough on the horses, but it just was a great learning experience. And I owe a lot to Carlos and everybody that was at Suffolk enduring all that. And they endured it all because... most of them really adored the horses, mm-hmm. and they couldn't live without them. And they, you know, they lived in the barn, they lived in the tack room. I mean, it was really, really a tough economic situation, tough social situation. In fact, when I first went there, I thought the barbed wire on the top of the fence that wouldn't allow people in was put up there to keep security for the track, but I realized later that it was to keep the people that were inside from going outside.
Well, now as your love for the horses developed, then you eventually began to get curious about what happens to horses after their racing and breeding days are over. Tell me about that stage that you went through.
Well, it was very interesting because at Suffolk, they used to always tell me when a horse disappeared that they went to a riding academy in Maine. Mm-hmm. I said, wow, that's nice, you know, the riding academy in Maine. And then after a while, I started to think to myself, wait a minute, I've been to Maine. There must be 10,000 riding academies, and I've never seen one. And then I realized that they were just going down the slaughter pipeline because they were no longer of use. And I'm not one to quickly damn the people, although it's a horrifying thing to do, I'm not quick to damn the people because, look, they were getting, instead of paying $250 to have a horse euthanized, which they should have done, they would get $250. So it was a $500 swing. And for people that are trying to make ends meet and pay the feed guy and pay their help and everything, it was a tough decision to make. And it was a decision I thought that was unfair to put on the trainers and the owners of the people that own these horses at the bottom of the barrel. Mm-hmm. And eventually I thought, well, I think these horses still have some value. And I can give you one very quick example. There was a really, Carlos had this wonderful mare, and I was in love with her. And she was so nice. And she had a lot of back class. And one day he came in and he goes, well, I found a good place for her in Maine. And I went, oh, no. I said, Carlos, you can't go send her to Maine. I said, give me 3 days. I'll find someplace else where she can go. And he goes, okay. So he comes in about maybe 3 days later and he goes, I found a home for it. I sold her for $2,500. I'm saying, oh, that's great. Well, now I know she's got a good home and everything. Years later, we're already down in Kentucky. We're renting paddocks from Alfred Knuckles over at Hurstland Farm. And Mike Barnett, who owned the neighboring farm, Blackburn Farm, came in the office all smiles. And I said, what are you smiling about? And he goes, well, I just sold a mare and foal. I said, yeah. And Tim Overton, who was the farm manager, said, well, how much, tell him the story. How much did you get? He goes, well, I sold her for $1.2 million to Coolmore. I said, what's her name? And he goes, Satin Sunrise. And that was that same horse.
Wow.
1.2. I couldn't wait to call Carlos back. Hello, senor.
Yeah.
But her first foal she ever had was Lionheart. And, of course, he was a multiple grade one stakes winner and a very good stallion in his own right. And so, eventually I went to Dr. Byers, took me over to Coolmore to see her. And she's there with Rags to Riches, the Belmont winner, that filly, and the Vertigenu, the Dama Zenyatta, and there she is, Sad Sunrise. I was in tears. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, and there are many stories like that in racing, many more of a lack of success, but many stories like that in racing that just seem to defy the odds and keep people coming back and being involved in it. And it's a wonderful game in that sense. And then you meet a lot of great people, too, as I'm sure you have over the years. But now, you needed some key figures to help get started there at Old Friends, and our former governor, Brereton Jones, was in the middle of that, wasn't he?
Oh, that poor guy. I bet he rues the day he ever met me. But when I first came here, of course, it was an idea. And I tell people when they come to the farm now, if you have a good idea, no matter how bad you are at it, if you keep at it, it'll eventually work, if it's a good idea to begin with. And that's what it was with Old Friends. But when I first came here, there were a few people I wanted to meet and talk to about it because I didn't know what I was doing. So I called Governor Jones over at Airdrie Stud and asked him if I could come over and bother him for 15 minutes or half an hour or so because I wanted to start this program where we'd attract visitors to Kentucky because I was an outsider and I realized how valuable these horses were. I mean, I never would have stepped foot in Kentucky if Bold Forbes wasn't over at the horse park. And I got to see him. So anyway, I made an appointment to go see Governor Jones, and I went to see him. And after I explained to him what I was going to do, he looked at me with this very strange expression, and he goes, let me get this straight. You're going to get these horses, right? Yeah. And you're going to bring some of them home from Japan. I go, that's right. And he goes, you're not going to breed them. No. And you're not going to sell them. No. And you're not going to race them. I said, no. And he looked at me with this very curious expression. He goes, what exactly are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to put them in my yard and hope people come visit. And he looked at me like I was a Martian.
Mm-hmm.
And he reached into his drawer of his desk, and he got an old tattered checkbook out, and he wrote a check to Old Friends for $5,000, handed me the check with his left hand, shook my right hand, and said, good luck.
Yeah.
And then you know, he just became one of our greatest supporters right from the beginning.
Let's back up just a little bit. Let's get you from Boston to Kentucky, because that's a pretty big step, especially since you'd had another career and doing very well in Boston. But how did that move take place, and what brought it about?
Well, you know, my wife, Diane White, she was an acclaimed columnist. Every year they would vote for best columnist, and she, you know, at the Boston Globe. And Mike Barnicle was a columnist, and Ellen Goodman. I mean, she had but every year she would win best columnist. She's a really, really good columnist. And I was the movie critic at the time. And I've been there for 25 years, and I think she'd been there for 30. And at that point, I didn't care if I ever saw another movie again in my entire life. And she felt like she needed to do something different too. We were getting paid a reasonable salary, so the Globe wanted to get rid of us. And we wanted to leave. So it was when the New York Times, who bought the Globe, offered a buyout, we took it. And she was the first one out. I was the fourth one out. And we're sitting there one day, and I said, you know what? I really want to do something with these horses and do something. I'd come down here, and I'd written a story about a horse for the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation that ended up right down the street here at Blackburn Prison. And I knew that people... When I covered the movies, I realized that people were around movie stars, they're fans. And I thought, I'm that way around these horses. I mean, when I saw Skip Away, when I first laid eyes on Cigar, when I saw Forgo and Bull Forbes over at the Horse Park, I mean, it was thrilling. And I felt very privileged to be able to set eyes on these horses. And I thought, well, you know what? I think maybe I'm not the only one. Maybe there are some others that might go for this. So one day we're sitting around the house in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I said to Diane, I want to try this thing. Let's go to Kentucky. And she said, we've hardly ever been to Kentucky. You've been there. I've never even been there. I said, I know, but look, our son lives in Australia. Our parents passed away. We'll give it a shot. If we don't like it after a year, year and a half, we'll just come back. Let's exercise our freedom here, since we don't have our regular jobs. And so she thought about it for about 20 minutes, and then she came back to me. She said, "Okay, I'll go with you, but only under one condition." I said, "Okay, what's that?" And she said, "Well, I want you to promise me one thing." I said, "Okay, what is it?" She goes, "When I leave you, you won't come looking for me." I said, "Okay, fine." Anyway, we came down here, and we've been here for the last 20 years.
Yeah,
but it was jumping off the cliff. But mm-hmm. I'm not a very good business person, and I lack a lot of skills in a lot of different areas. But I can jump off a cliff, and that's what we did.
And here you are 20 years later.
Yeah, yeah. What it's been great.
To grow. Yeah, tours are available at the farm, of course. But give listeners, especially if they haven't been there, a little bit of a description, because you're not when you see Silver Charm or some of the other great horses that we'll talk about in a minute, you don't see them just way across a field. You get up close and personal, at least in most cases, don't you?
That's correct. Yeah, they'll come over for a carrot. I mean, the only thing I tell the people that work for us, and we have a team now that works for us, it is unbelievable. We put together a team of old friends and people that take care of these horses and the people that work in the office. And it's taken us 20 years, but now we finally have a team that can compete for the World Series. I mean, it's really, really a great team. So we have these tour guides, and they go out and tell the stories of all these great horses that we have. And we brought people to the farm from all over the world to come and see, come and share that experience with us.
And Silver Charm is, I guess, the star of the show at this point, although there are others very prominent as well who have accomplished a lot in racing. But he's the 1997 Kentucky Derby winner, and so that puts you at the top of the list. And I know folks enjoy seeing him. And as you said, as you're close to the horses and around them, you have a different sort of relationship. And I know you get close enough out there that you can see a Silver Charm and almost imagine him in this very quiet setting as you look at him, but almost imagine him in front of hundreds of thousands of people over his racing career and the cheering and all of that and being in the spotlight. But here he is now in this quiet setting. But still, you can come up with that as an onlooker and feel that relationship.
You know, I didn't meet Ted Williams until he was long, long retired. Mm-hmm. And I got to interview him, and it was really special because he was so special when I was a kid growing up in New England. I mean, it's Ted Williams.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to stand out by the left field wall at Fenway Park with him, and I feel the same way with Silver Charm, and I think a lot of other people feel that way with Silver Charm in particular. He's the king. He's the oldest living Derby winner, the oldest living Preakness winner. He just turned 29 years old, and people come from literally all over the world to see him.
Mm-hmm. And this was the key to your whole idea, wasn't it? That people would come to see these horses because that was something that wasn't being done at the time. Would they actually come to see a great horse from years ago? And the answer obviously is yes.
Yes, and you know, for every great horse we have, like Silver Charm, we even have the horse who deprived him of the Triple Crown. We have Touch Gold there, who beat him in the Belmont, ruined his Triple Crown. Now we've just retired Lava Man, who's in the Hall of Fame. He and Silver Charm are both in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, we have these big-name horses that have accomplished a lot. We have 15, maybe 16 Breeders' Cup winners at the farm. But for every one we get like that, we like to get one who's just needs a home. It's just in a really bad situation, and we try and balance it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are some examples of that, too. Now, the name Zippy Chippy comes up. Tell me about Zippy Chippy.
Zippy Chippy. Well, when I had my horses up at Suffolk, because eventually I owned a few horses, and I had a $3,500 claimer named Summer Attraction. And he's still at my farm. He's still with me. He's 28 years old, and he's been with me ever since he was 3 years old. But Zippy Chippy, the reason I even mention that is because when I claimed Summer Attraction up at Finger Lakes in the middle of on Mother's Day in 1999, the stall next to him was occupied by Zippy Chippy. Now Zippy Chippy, for those of you who don't know, has been the subject of a major biography. The rights of his life have been sold to Walt Disney, and this horse raced 100 times exactly and never broke his maiden. He never won one race. He was 0-100. The only one he ever beat, he beat a baseball player, played for the Red Sox and the Yankees, named McDonald, and he beat him, but I think that was it. But he was a very smart horse, and it was the hardest negotiation I ever had. He's the only, literally true, I've got these horses that won Awesome Again, won the Breeders' Cup Classic. He's a great stallion. As we say, Silver Charm and Touch Gold and Game On Dude and Little Mike and all these great multimillionaire horses, and yet people came to see Zippy Chippy more than anybody. He's the subject of a major biography, and as I say, they sold his rights to Walt Disney, so he's very famous in a strange way. But he was 0-100. I actually saw him race 3 times, and after he lost 93 races, I called his trainer, Felix Maserati, and I said, Felix, I said, I really want to get Zippy Chippy to the farm. And do you know, all of a sudden I get a call from a lawyer, and I got to sign all these papers, and I'm not going to get the movie rights, and I'm not going to get this. We had to pay for the horse. We had to buy him for $5,000, which was almost more than he ever earned.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And we got him, and he was a superstar up at our farm in New York, and unfortunately Zippy passed away just a few months ago.
Mm-hmm. So, again, you have the balance there. You have some of the horses are among the most prominent in the world, and then others never had much success on the
yes.
track. But they all have a nice home in their senior years now.
They all eating the same hay.
Yeah. Celebrities associated with racing are numerous, of course. The horse racing business attracts the people in show business or sports. And you, of course, were familiar with talking to some of the major celebrities in the movie business. And now you see some connections like that in the horse business as well. Tell me about some of the famous names that have been associated indirectly with old friends.
Well, you know, Jack Nicholson, actor, told me that we got to be friendly because we liked going to basketball games. But he used to sneak over the fence at Monmouth Park when he would growing up in New Jersey to place bets. And some of the best interviews I ever did were literally at the track. John Houston at Suffolk Downs, you know Marty Ritt and Jack Klugman at Santa Anita and all of that. the whole celebrity, and now we get to meet a lot of these Hall of Fame jockeys and Hall of Fame owners and Hall of Fame trainers that whose horses end up at Old Friends. I mean, Chris McCarron, the Hall of Fame jockey, visits all the time. He loves these horses, and the same thing with Ramon Dominguez, who's in the Hall of Fame, and we have his favorite horse of all time there, Fabulous Strike. Jerry Moss, who owns Zenyatta and is the M and A&M Records, he has been supportive ever since we started. Angie Dickinson, the actress, has been tremendous to us. In fact, we had a horse who was in a situation that was a little dicey, named Academy Award, and I called her up and I said, Angie, I need $5,000 because I'm trying to get this horse Academy Award. And can you send it? So she sent me the money, when they interviewed her for the Blood Horse, I remember her saying, well, they asked her why she did it. And she said, well, I've always wanted to have an Academy Award, and now I do.
Well, tell me about the reaction from guests. These are, you get people from, I guess, all over the world and to come in and see the horses. And many of them, or most of them, no doubt, are familiar with several of the names of the prominent horses and their histories. But when they've actually gotten to see them up close and in person, when they express their reaction to you, what sort of reactions do you get from them?
It's unbelievable. It's sometimes it's writ large my reaction. We've had people come to from all over the world, of course, to see Silver Charm. There was a woman who's told me that she was suicidal and she saw Silver Charm, and for some magical reason, Silver Charm changed her mind. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting to see all these different reactions. We had a guy come. We had a horse named Taylor Special. Some of your older listeners may remember this horse. He won the Bluegrass Stakes, and he was one of the favorites for the Kentucky Derby in 1984. And I had a guy come, a veteran, and a big, strong, tough guy, and he saw Taylor Special's grave, and he dropped to his knees and started to just cry like a baby. I mean, it's unbelievable. I took the rest of the tour away, and then later I came back, and we started talking. And he used to work for Bill Mott, and he said, this horse, for a year and a half, I took care of this horse, mm-hmm. all the way up until the Derby. And he really saved my life. And he not only was my best friend, he was my only friend. And I can't believe that he's here.
Yeah.
And there's so many stories that go along like that. We've had people with Asperger's syndrome come and relate to the horses. And the horses are very intelligent. People denigrate their intelligence, but they do that so at their own peril, because these horses are really, really smart. And they recognize kids. I mean, when one of the things that Governor Jones told me, he says, you better watch it with these stallions. They're going to bite people, and nobody's ever been hurt at the farm. And it's because the horses are in charge and because they know that we're no threat to them. And so when they see people, and especially children, they're very, very kind, and they really know what to do, and they're totally non-aggressive. And it's amazing to see them with kids and see them with people in wheelchairs and see them with, I mean, it's just an amazing thing with what they can accomplish. I mean, we've only scratched the surface on how valuable these horses are once they retire. I mean, they look at them now and they go, well, you can't race, can't breed, can't do any of this other kind of stuff. You're just standing around, right? Well, their value is extraordinary still, because these people come from all over the world, and whatever perceptions and whatever relationship they build with this animal is just like you would build with a friend or build with a pet or build with anything that you feel like you're getting some response from.
I know you have a great team out there. You referred to them earlier, and part of that team would, of course, include the veterinary care that these horses get. Because as we get older, the doctor appears more frequently on our calendars, and I'm sure that applies to them.
Doesn't he? Yeah, we've been very fortunate. I mean, the veterinarians in this community have been spectacular to us. Doug Byers, who was probably the premier medical veterinarian in the history of Kentucky equine veterinary medicine. He was our first veterinarian, and he was the greatest. He came by one day and donated $1,000 to Old Friends. And so Sylvia, who works in the office, called me. She goes, Dr. Byers just came by, and he said he donated $1,000. I said, he did? Wow, that's amazing. He's a cool Morvette. I mean, he's just dealing with all the Derby winners and everybody else. And the idea that he would come back and think about us was really extraordinary. So I called him up to thank him. In the middle of it, I worked up the courage to ask him if I could come over and talk to him, because like Governor Jones, I needed to learn as much as I possibly could. And he said, come by right after 5 o'clock in my office and bring a six pack of Sam Adams. I said, okay. So I did, and we did. And at the end of it, I worked up after a few Sam Adams. He claimed I drank 4 and he drank 2, but it was 3-3.
Okay.
And after that was over, I worked up the courage. I said, if I promised not to call you at 2 o'clock in the morning, would you be our vet? This is like Mickey Mantle coming to, be on your Little League team. Mm-hmm. And he's paused dramatically. And then he said, well, I'll only do it under one condition. I said, what's that? And he goes, that you will call me at 2 o'clock in the morning. And he did.
Wow.
And he never sent us a bill. And this is a guy, I'll tell you, give you one quick example of how respected he was. When Frankel or Galileo, the big horses in Europe, would get sick, they would send their private jet to Lexington and pick him up and send him over for the weekend to work on these horses. I saw him save Uncle Mo's life. I mean, he's an unbelievable vet, and he did everything for us. I'll tell you one more quick story about him. That's so great. So when a horse would run into trouble, I wouldn't know what to do. I know that he wasn't acting right, or he wasn't eating right, or something. And I'd call him up, and I'd be very emotional because I was really afraid that something was going to happen bad for the horse. And I couldn't quite get the words out. And so finally he got really exasperated. He said, every time you call me up about a horse, all you do is moan and groan and rah, 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 rah. I go, yeah? He goes, well, I'm going to teach you something. And he handed me a little bag. Inside the bag was a stethoscope and a thermometer. Now, I want to know what his heart rate is. I want to know what his temperature is. I want to know what his gums look like. I want to know what his gut sounds like. And he said, I'm going to teach you how to use this stuff, and you better use it correctly. So I said, okay, fine. So that was really good, because he said, I want to make a diagnosis on my way over there. I want to hear mo, mo, mo. I want to hear temperature. I want to hear this information so we can do something for good for the horse, not good for you and your stupid thing. Anyway, I said, okay, fine. So he taught me how to use all that stuff. And one day he came by and he goes, I want to make sure you're using this correctly. And we went, he took me in his truck, and we went all around and back through. I thought I was being kidnapped. And we end up in this kind of nondescript barn, and there's two horses in the barn. One was a beautiful chestnut, and the other was kind of a ratty little bay horse. And he says, bring that bay horse out here. I want you to give him a complete physical. And I look up on the nameplate, and it says Stormcat.
Oh, wow.
And most of your listeners probably know that Stormcat's stud fee was $500,000 and became one of the greatest stallions in the history of the sport. But I did his physical, and I barely passed, but I did pass.
Yeah, I'm sure he appreciated your demeanor of a veteran veterinarian there, too. That brings me, too, into the day-to-day operations at Old Friends. Sometimes there's a need to have the vet out there, but in any case, there's always daily operational needs. And again, you've got a great team, but you have to be overseeing that as much as you can. Is there a typical day? For we're taping in the, we're recording in the middle of the winter right now, but is there a typical day?
No, and that's the beauty of it. It's never typical. You wake up in the morning, you don't know what's going to happen, and that's part of the excitement of it. It's part of what makes it interesting. There's nothing dull about it, and there's nothing routine. And we have such a great team now. I tell them, the one piece of advice I give them when they first come is, look, these horses have been in stalls. They've been told what to do their entire lives. Do this, do that, run here, run there, get in the stall, eat this. And humans have always been in charge. Now, literally true, when they come here, they're in charge. And our only obligation is to figure out what they want and what they want and when they want it. And because nobody's coming here to see us. They're coming here to see these amazing horses. And, it's really interesting because every one of these horses thinks differently and needs different things at different times. Silver Charm's a very good example. He doesn't like getting petted. He doesn't like you to pet him. And he didn't like the cars at night, so we put him in at night. He didn't like the cars on the road. The lights or something bother him. But other than that, nothing else bothers him. You can lead him around with dental floss, and he'll do whatever you want as long as you obey those two rules. And every horse is different that way. And discovering that and knowing that the people that work there can discover that makes my job. I don't really have a job. I just walk around and try and stay out of their way. I'm like Casey Stengel, just sit in the dugout and chew tobacco. You know?
Watch them win, right?
Yeah.
Now, as things go on, of course, eventually old friends will have to go on without you.
And yes.
So you have to keep the succession plan in mind. And, of course, you're going on 20 years now, and we hope you have 20 more at least. But you have to make the plan. It's gone incredibly successfully to this point. How do you continue that?
Well, tomorrow's my 76th birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. the interesting thing is we have such a good team now. It's taken us a long time to put the team where people get along, people know what they're doing, they're real professionals, they know much more about it than I do. To put together that kind of team is very, very, very important. And I think that not only when I can't do this anymore, not only will it be just as good, it'll be better because it'll be younger people with new ideas that will think of things that I never ever thought of. I told my wife, I said, you know, we have the cemetery in the back behind our house, and Precisionist is buried in there, and all these great Breeders' Cup winners, and you know, we put their names on their graves and on the sign and the trainer and the owner and their lifetime earnings. So I told my wife one day, I said, look, when I die, just get me cremated, throw my ashes out the back, just do not put my lifetime earnings on the sign. So, no, I think it will prosper. It'll go in directions that I never even conceived of, and I'm fully confident of that.
Mm-hmm. And one of the great things about you getting it started is that you have people that you could pick up the phone and make a call and at least get in front of. And that's so important in something like this. So whoever succeeds you, there's going to have to be somebody in that role, isn't there, to continue to stay in contact with the key people in racing, although you are much better known than you were as a facility.
When you're around for 20 years, you kind of bump into people. But there are. And because of old friends, the people that work with us have been introduced to, like after we brought Charismatic, the Derby and Preakness winner, the wonderful horse, back from Japan, the next day Wayne Lucas was there to see him as trainer. Bob Baffert comes all the time to see these horses. So when they come, all the people that work at the farm and they are introduced to them, so they know them. And you know, I've got the phone numbers of these people, and if ever I ran into trouble or ever I need anything, we got such a great team beyond it. Our donors and our board of directors is fabulous. We have so many people that want to help us that there's no effort to what I do. And I hope there's no effort in whoever succeeds me when I can't do it anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. But the idea that I can look out my back window every day and see Silver Charm waiting for me to cut up his carrots.
Yeah,
keeps me going.
That's pretty special. let me ask you about just an invitation you might give to. I'm sure you get a chance to talk to people who either aren't familiar with Old Friends or only vaguely familiar and have never made the trip out there to see it. It is a wonderful trip. You must make it. But what do you tell them?
Well, that's what I tell them. I said we're open all the time. I love to show people around. You know, I'll tell you one very quick story about a guy. One day, I'd done four or five tours. I was tired, and it was a Friday late in the day, and I sat down in my Adirondack chair in the back looking up at Silver Charm. I opened up a beer, and I opened up the brand-new racing firm because on Saturdays, that's where I get to go to simulcast, go to the races. And a car came up the driveway, and this guy stopped, and he said, I heard this is a cool place. Can I look around? And I said, well, I'm sorry, sir. We're closed. Can you come back tomorrow? And he goes, no, I'm from North Dakota, and we're leaving on a plane tomorrow morning. But he seemed nice. So I drove him around, and we'd go in a golf cart. They had beer, too. It was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he told me he's going to give me a donation, but he forgot his checkbook. Well, I didn't think much of that, except it was a pretty sorry excuse. And then a couple of weeks later, I got an email from him. I'm going to send some money from Fargo, North Dakota. I'm thinking, you must own the pharmacy. What do they have in Fargo?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe it'll be $50 or $100. And at the time, I owed like $100,000 that I had to get paid off in like 2 months. And the Monday after Thanksgiving, 4 years ago, I opened up the mail and there was a check in there for $500,000.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was a worthy tour then, wasn't it?
I tell people all the time, if people want to make the effort to come to the farm to see these horses, the least thing we can do is show them around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a way of summing it up, and you've touched on this throughout the conversation here, but as you look back on 20 years now, what are some of the top thoughts that come to mind as you reflect a little bit on this?
Well, the main thought, is selfishly, is that people ask me sometimes, you know, do you go on vacation? Or something? I said, why would I go on vacation? This isn't a job. So people who go on vacations, they have a job and they need relief from the job to go on vacation and get their legs back so they can come back in refreshed. I said, but every day is 7 days a week. I mean, the crazy thing is when I was living in Boston, my greatest time of the year was to go opening week at Saratoga. I looked forward to that all year round, and I didn't miss it for 26 years in a row. I went to opening week at Saratoga. Mm-hmm. And now I get to go there. My friend owns an inn. He lets me stay there for free. I could, you know, and all of that. But after 2 or 3 days, I'm totally homesick for Kentucky because I'm the only person on the planet Earth that gets to wake up every day and look out his back window and see Silver Charm and all these great horses. And where else would you rather be on the whole planet?
Yeah, and I know you want others to continue to come. What's the best way to check things out and learn some basics about Old Friends and maybe arrange a tour?
Well, we have a website. It's oldfriendsequine.org. Old Friends was taken by an old age home dating service. But so we have oldfriendsequine.org. And if you want to arrange a tour, you can call them. And the phone number is 502-863-1775. And I hope, especially when the weather gets nicer, people will come. And the day after the Derby, we have a big party. And if you want to come to that, that's really great because half the time the people who won the Derby end up coming there with the blanket. And it's a great celebration and a lot of fun.
Well, it sounds like it. And again, it's a trip that is very much worth your while. Regardless of your level of interest in racing, you'll enjoy it. And if you are a big racing fan, you will truly enjoy seeing some of the greats of that sport. Michael Blowen, thank you very much for your time. We really do appreciate it.
Keith, it's such a pleasure meeting you. And I know, you know, you're the legend here. You know, if we had a farm for broadcasters, you could come out and tell stories. We put you in a stall.
Well, thank you. That would be my honor. And I'm sure I could just talk away to whether there was an audience or not. But thanks again.
You've been listening to The Sports Page with Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to The Sports Page through Google Play or at our website, wuky.org.